Mr. Hirsch, reel three.
We are very scared to go on high because obviously somebody would have definitely told on us and would have been captured and would have been shot. So the option we did, my mother decided to, what will happen to the Jews of Sheretz, it will happen to us. And that morning we had to go to the square, to the Appell Square, and were counted and then marched off towards the cloister, which was a church in the town. We're all marched into that church. And after being there for about an hour, we're told to walk out. And as we walked out, we were confronted by two high-ranking SS officers, which got me a terrible shock because I knew what these people can do. Very savage people, very savage units, the SS. And as I approached him with my mother, brother, and sister, he asked me what's my profession, and I said, Schneider. He's a tailor, and he told me to go to the other way with my mother, brothers and sisters, with the certain section of the people, and he did choose eventually about 150 people which were younger, in the teenagers and the 20s and 30s and 40s. And he told them to go on the other side and ask the children and mothers and a certain amount of people which were left were told to go back into the church.
Why did you say tailor?
I thought if you have a profession, they might need you for work. And it came into mind, but he told me to go back in to the other side. I suppose for survival reason, you learn certain things as you go along. And that camp, this autotion, taught me a lot of things. And we went back into the church, and the other 150 people stood on that square, still stayed there. And I said to my mother, have you got a pan? I'm very thirsty. I'll go to the gate and try and get some water. And so she found me a pan, what she had on it for the journey. And as I walked towards the gate of that church, the same two high-ranking SS officers stood there and they said, they called me out, they said, what's your profession? And I said, tailor, Schneider. And they said, rouse, to go out and join the other group of 150 people. And they needed another 30 people from the amount of people which were still in the church for work. And I got very nervous. My mother didn't know where I was. Then suddenly we were turned around and were told to start marching. And as I marched off with a pan in my hand, I looked into the gates of the church, and I've never seen my mother or my brothers and sisters anymore, and that was the end. We marched off to the station and were put on wagons, and eventually we arrived in the Lodz ghetto. That was about August 1942. And from there onwards, we brought in the ghetto, which was fenced around, and were taken to two different buildings. and we had mattresses on the floor. There was about 30 people in the room, all the mattresses, and that's where we slept. We got a small ration, very hungry, very, very upset I was, because I was looking maybe my family, some of my family were alive with another transport, but it wasn't to be. The whole town Jews were taken to Chelmno extermination camp, and they were all killed there in 1942. I carried on a large ghetto, very upset, on my own. Everybody had their own problems. Nobody wanted to know anything, and I was crying. And then after several days, the Germans decided they wanted transport of children and elderly people from the large ghetto. And the committee didn't give them sufficiently children. I think they wanted about 10,000 for extermination. Well, people had an idea what it was for. The president of the ghetto at that time was Chaim Rumkowski. And the Germans decided to go house by house and find children and take them out of the ghetto. And I heard about it. There was a cemetery on the other side of the wall of the building where I was with the people from Sheraz. I looked for a spot because I heard a lot of shooting, and it was getting nearer. I jumped over the wall, fell, I twisted my ankle, but it didn't worry me. I dashed to behind a stone, a tombstone on the cemetery, and I hid, and I was crying and begging to help somebody to help me, to save me. And I heard the shooting nearer and nearer, and eventually it got through our building, and at least I was hiding, and I felt a bit safe where I was. After several hours, when the shooting receded, I came back to the building, and the people thought that I was taken away. And yeah, I was in that building for about a week after that, and eventually we started being distributed for work, for making boots for the German soldiers and uniforms and everything. Because Lodge Ghetto, they kept the Lodge Ghetto for that purpose, to work for the German army. While they were useful, they kept them. And the rations were getting lower and lower, and you could just about survive. Very hungry all the time. And I got to a stage, I just sat down on the corner and I cried, and I was so fed up with everything. I had nobody, no family, nobody to talk to or to ask anything. And I got a tap on the shoulder, and this to the lady in her 40s, and she says, "What's the problem? What's the matter with you?" So I told her what's happened. I'm on my own. I've got nobody, no family, nobody. And she says, "Come, I've got a daughter, which is about 2 years older than you, and you can stay with us." So she took me by the hand, and I walked into the house. She lived on the top floor, and she had a room with her daughter, a bed, everything, and she says, "Well, you can stay in this room," and this room only had a mattress, and a bucket for the toilet because the toilet's got outside. He says, you can stay here. And I stayed with her, and I was sent for coal, to bring coal or whatever it is, all the errands for her. And
what kind of a woman was this?
She worked as a cook in the fire department, in the fire service. Even in the ghetto, the Germans had, there was a Jewish fire department. There was ghetto money with the head of Linkowski on the picture, and everything like running a government, in other words. There was about 250,000 Jews in the Lodz ghetto at that time. And every so often they took so many elderly people out who wasn't any good for work anymore, children and old people or sick people. They used to come and take them out. And that's how the population was made smaller and smaller. They brought in all the Jews from the German part of Poland, the Wartegau, what they used to call, and they brought them all in into Lodz ghetto. So as they were bringing in amounts, they used to send out amounts for extermination. And I was with this lady for several months. The winter came, and I got very ill, laying in a room, no heating, and the Polish winters are very, very severe, like in Siberia, ice, snow, and there was no heating, and I got a chill on my bladder, and I suffered terribly. And one day I was carrying a sack on my shoulders for this lady, and I dropped that sack, and a boy about 2 years older than me says, you can't lift it up on your own, I'll give you a hand. And he was very thin himself. He says, where do you live? So I told him, I'm staying with this lady. Anyway, he told me he's in an orphanage run by Chaim Linkowski, by the president of the ghetto. He actually was in charge of an orphanage before the war. And he always had that great affinity with children who are orphans. And I was taken down for an interview, and they took me in, which was like paradise for me. I was with children of my own age. I was sent to work in a textile mill, changing the warp of the looms, and work as a tackler in a textile mill, which manufactured clothes for the German army. The food was very bad, and everybody was walking around like skeletons. You could see people dying in the street because the Germans, every month, they lowered the rations, that people didn't hardly had any strength to work, but they had to give out the production, whatever happened. I was in the orphanage until June, beginning of July of 1944. We heard that the Russians are nearing Lodz. There was news coming in through underground, but news did get into the Lodz ghetto that the Russian army is moving forward. So we were hoping to be liberated, and one day we were told by our teacher in the orphanage to get ready, that the ghetto is being liquidated, and we're going east for work. Nobody knew where. And there was 195 children in the orphanage. And one day we're told to take our few belongings, what we had, and hold two of us in a row in a march off towards the station. That was between June and July 1944. And at least I knew I was with my friends, and that made me happy, that I can be with younger people and of my age. And eventually reached the station, and at the station we noticed, I noticed the SS were there and police, and I didn't like what I was seeing. And we were driven into fast into wagons, cattle wagons, which had only a small window above, and up to 100 people were in each wagon, very cramped, no water, just a bucket for the loo. And I was with one or two of my friends from the orphanage, and we started a journey, a long journey.
Were these both boys and girls? Boys and girls?
Yes, we were boys and girls. And that made me feel happy that I've had some friends of mine with me. And eventually, after about 2 days and a night, we arrived at the destination. I said to two of my friends to push me up to look through the window, and on the journey as well, we had terrible people being ill, sick, somebody died, and we couldn't sleep, all cramped up. Eventually, when we arrived at the destination, when I looked outside, I could see barbed wire. I could see some SS moving around with dogs, striped suits, men in striped suits, very thin-looking people. And right away, I got scared, I got frightened once I've seen the SS. I took my turn. I could hear shouting from wagons in front of us. Raus, raus, schnell. Get out quick. And I could see a lot of assessment moving around with their dogs. And wagon after wagon opened up, and people were told to stand outside, march towards a certain destination, which we did as well. We marched forward in columns, and as we marched forward, our turn came from the orphanage, and the whole orphanage was told to go with the elderly people and the children, and I was picked to gas chambers. All of them. I didn't know at that particular time, but I knew one thing: I shouldn't be with children or elderly people. That taught me from my first camp. And there was a lot of commotion, children being torn away from their mothers, and people being beaten because they tried to run over on the other side. I stopped, and I've noticed some men, fitter men, walking to the other direction, and I suddenly followed, like somebody pushed me and said, go there, and I started to follow, and another boy from the orphanage followed me, and we walked with this column, and then we marched into a large square. That was Birkenau, Auschwitz. We arrived, I didn't even know where that was. We stood in that square for about an hour, and gates opened up in the barrack, and the women with shaved heads in the nude were driven out by the SS with whips. Husbands seeing their wives, fathers seeing their daughters. It was a terrible commotion, and we men had to stand there and wait for our turn to come. It was a terrible ordeal for me to watch all that. Eventually, our turn came. We're told to go inside, and we called to undress, leave our clothing in front. With this clothing, I had the last few photographs of my parents and my family, and everything was what I had in front of me. I stood in the nude with everybody else. Suddenly, after a while, the same high-ranking officer came in, and he looked through the column as we stood in the nude, and he called me out. He says, "Who told you to come in here?" I said, "I was told to come over here." And then he noticed another four boys. And he chose another four boys and told us to go outside. In the meantime, he told something to a sergeant, to a SS sergeant, and the SS sergeant walked away. And he came back after about half an hour. In the meantime, we stood there as five boys. He came back and he said something to the high-ranking officer. It seemed that all the lorries to the gas chambers were busy with the transport of 5,000 people. They had no lorries to send for us. And after a while, he said to us to go back into the column. We showered. Given the striped uniform of Auschwitz, and tattooed. I got a number, B7608. That was my passport for living for about 3 months, be able to work. That was my name, that was my... Anytime they needed me, the number was called out. My name wasn't important anymore. I was just a number.
What did the B stand for?
They was originally, in the beginning, there was just a number on the left arm, on the outside, and then transport A came in after so many thousands. 100,000, I don't know, and then B was given, and we were the last number actually. And with that, they marched us off to a camp called Zigeunerlager, Gypsy Camp, where several days before that they took all the gypsies out and gassed them all and killed the whole lot of them with their families together. We were taken into that camp, starved. I was so starving, there was nothing, there was no water, no nothing, and we laid on so many on a box of straw, about over 1,000 in the barrack.
Was Gypsy Camp still part of Birkenau?
Yes. it was a Zeilager, that's Zigeunerlager, gypsy camp. And from there, they kept us there for about 2 weeks.
Without doing any work?
Without doing any work. Just counting us every day. And driving us back into the camp, into the barracks. And
why do you think that man picked you out from that group with the other boys?
Because they're too small for work. That's the reason we wanted to send us back to the gas chambers. But there was no lobby. Now, when we came out afterwards, a couple, a Jewish couple came over to us, was a foreman, and he showed us for the first time the chimneys facing us, belching out smoke. He said, that's where you would have gone if he had a lobby for you. And that, for the first time, I realized there were gas chambers and crematoriums. What they're doing with the people. Out of that transport, I would say, out of 5,000 people, there must have been about 400 which they chose for work. The rest all were killed in the gas chambers. That's for the first time I was very terrified and very worried. Very uneasy all the time. I couldn't sleep, I couldn't eat, I couldn't do anything. Just worried what's going to happen to us. After 2 weeks being in that camps, they came, checked up with how tall you are, how to measure up if you fit for work. And if you went, you went to gas chambers, and eventually I was chosen to work in a camp on an agricultural unit, looking after horses, plowing the ground with two horses, and being beaten on many occasions.
This is still at Birkenau?
Yes. No, that was just outside Birkenau, a place called Budde. B-U-D-Y. Well, Auschwitz had a lot of camps. It was about 30 kilometers in diameter with many camps, many different camps. Budde, Prague, all different camps. And so I worked with some more boys and older people there, and I worked after plowing, and then they took me into working in a fishery, commander, and we used to catch fish and deliver the stura.
With nets?
Yes. We had tied rubber boots, and the boots were bigger than me. And then we had to sort them out on tables. We had to march about 5 kilometers one way, very